It's 1900 UTC, and that means it's time for That's News to Me. I'm your host, DJ Marcus. Let's see what's happening in the world today.
Oh boy. Hello. Welcome, one and all. It is September 24th, 2021, and it is 1900 UTC, which means that it's time for news to me. So, hello. Howdy. I'm going to go ahead and SSH over to SDF. That's how Anon Radio is powered through SDF. So, if you don't have an account, you can listen all you want. But if you want to talk or chat during the show, you need to SSH over to SDF. That's just, if you don't have an account, it's new, N-E-W at SDF.org, and that will get you through the sign-up process. Once you have an account, you can launch COM just by typing COM at the command prompt. And from there, you press G for go to. And we'll do that together. Go ahead here. Do. All right, we press G for go to. There we go. And then we type Anon Radio, all lowercase. When you do that, you will land in the Anon Radio room, where there are 61 people currently logged in, but lots of people log in multiple times from different places, like Zerg from 4 different spots. Or me from 3. Apparently I have 3 open sessions I gotta go track down. But anyway, welcome, and howdy. Hello to people in COM, including Northern Lights and Stug, and Froggy Me and W. Visser. Hello. So, we're going to go ahead here. I don't have my news organized like I normally do. I've got all the bookmarks, but I didn't go through the sorting process I normally do because I'm on vacation. So, I'm not super into it. Oh, crap. I've left the computer playing an on radio on too loud. So when I play a song, I'll go turn it down. It's annoying. It's bothering me when I hear it. All right, let's go ahead and get started the way we pretty much always start, and that's
World News.
Hey, hello, Snowdusk. Welcome. Glad to see you here. All right, so let's go ahead and begin over with the BBC. Huawei's Meng Wanzhou to be freed in a U.S. deal. A Chinese technology executive from Huawei, as being held in Canada on U.S. fraud charges, could be freed as early as Friday after prosecutors said an extradition request against her would be dropped. Meng Wanzhou, chief financial officer of Huawei, was detained in December 2018 at the request of the U.S. Ms. Meng pleaded not guilty to fraud charges in a U.S. court on Friday. The case sparked an international row, straining China's relation with the U.S. and Canada. It has been the subject of intense negotiations between U.S. and Chinese diplomats. On Friday, the U.S. Department of Justice said it had reached a deferred prosecution agreement. This means the DOJ would hold off from prosecuting Ms. Meng until December 2022. If she complied with conditions set by the court, the case would eventually be dropped. Under this agreement, her extradition case in Canada will likely be thrown out, and she could be freed almost immediately. Prosecutors also recommend that Ms. Meng be released on a personal recognizance bond, which will allow her to be freed without any collateral. The U.S. alleges Ms. Meng misled the bank HSBC over the true nature of Huawei's relationship with a company called Skycom, putting the bank at risk of violating U.S. sanctions against Iran. The Wall Street Journal says she would plead guilty on minor counts, while the more serious charges would be dropped. Ms. Meng is the elder daughter of billionaire Ren Zhengfei, who set up Huawei in 1987, building it up to become one of the biggest technology firms in the world. He served in the Chinese army for 9 years, till 1983, and is also a member of the Chinese Communist Party. So, be very interesting. Welcome, X1, welcome. So, this will be, So anyway, it's kind of interesting. We'll see how it works. The U.S., anyway, we do lots of supervillain bad guy shit around the world, and this is one of them. Jitender Man Goji, Indian gangster, shot dead in Delhi court. Two men posing as lawyers shot dead a notorious gangster inside a courtroom in India's capital of Delhi. They opened fire at Jitender Man Goji inside the courtroom in Rohini where a case was being heard against him. Officials say police returned fire, killing the two men. Police suspect a rival gang planned the attack. Goji was on Delhi police's most wanted list, and he was also on and accused in dozens of cases, including murder, kidnapping, and fraud in other states. The incident has raised questions over the security of Delhi's courts. A senior politician said that the incident showed a serious lapse in security planning. Goju was arrested in Delhi in March last year on charges of murder and extortion. Officials said he was a target of many gangs due to a swift rise in the crime world. Reporters say his career in crime began when he was a teenager and initially involved incidents of carjacking and theft. But later, he was a prime suspect in many high-profile killings, including that of a popular singer in Haryana State. So, pretty wild right there. What else is going on? Well, migrants are freezing to death. The BBC has obtained first-hand accounts from migrants who say they've been illegally deported from the European Union by Polish border troops. Close to the border between Belarus and Poland, the BBC's Europe correspondent Nick Beek found migrants stranded in a forest with nighttime temperatures dropping well below freezing. At least four people are known to have died. EU members, Poland, Latvia, and Lithuania, have each declared a state of emergency amid a surge of thousands of people trying to cross from Belarus. The EU has accused the Belarusian president, Alexander Lukashenko, of using migrants as a weapon, while Poland has banned aid workers and journalists from its border zone. So, very tragic news coming there. Belarus trying to cause trouble there. More sad news here for you. Necessary for security, veteran Taliban enforcers say amputations will resume. The Taliban will resume executions and the amputation of hands for criminals they convict in a return to their harsh version of Islamic justice. According to a senior official, a veteran leader of the hardline Islamist group who was in charge of justice during its previous period in power, executions would not necessarily take place in public as they did before. The Taliban's first period ruling Afghanistan during the 90s, before they were toppled by a U.S.-led invasion in 2001, was marked by the grisly excess of its perfunctory justice system, which included public executions in the football stadium in Kabul. In an interview with Associated Press, Nuruddin Turabi, who was justice minister and head of the so-called Ministry of Propagation of Virtue and Prevention of Vice during the Taliban's previous rule, dismissed outrage over the Taliban's execution in the past and warned the world against interfering with Afghanistan's new rulers. So, this is extra scary. Under the new Taliban government, Turabi is in charge of prisons. He's among a number of Taliban leaders, including members of the all-male interim cabinet, who are on a United Nations sanction list. Everyone criticized us for the punishments in the stadium, but we have never said anything about their laws and their punishments, Turabi said. No one will tell us what our laws should be. We will follow Islam and we will make our own laws on the Quran. So, cutting off hands is necessary for security, Turabi added, saying it had a deterrent effect. He said the cabinet was studying whether to carry out punishments in public and would develop a policy. Turabi's comments follow warnings from Afghans who fled the country following U.S. withdrawal that the Taliban's systems of justice was more likely to follow the model of the way its shadow courts meted out punishment in areas it controlled, rather than the system that operated under the Western-backed former government. The shadow court system, headed by Maulavi Abdul Hakim Sharih, who was the Taliban's new justice minister, was used to undermine the authority of the previous regime, resolving disputes in a country where many felt they had little access to legal remedy. A report by Human Rights Watch in 2020 suggested abuses by the Taliban justice system, including prolonged arbitrary detention and summary punishments, including executions. So, basically, if you're in prison in Afghanistan, it might as well be the 1800s or 1700s or whatever. So yeah, this is very scary and troubling, considering how far the rest of the world's come from this. All right, calm is a fun place. Welcome. So let's go through this. Okay, so we talked about Meng Wanzhou. Prosecutors in Mexico are seeking arrest warrants for more than 30 scientists. This is kind of the beginning of the end. Don't worry, if you're hearing this now, you're old enough that you'll probably die before the worst of it happens. At least my fear. But anyway, here's the story. Mexico's scientific community has reacted with outrage after the country's chief prosecutor requested arrest warrants for 31 scientists, researchers, and academics on accusations of organized crime, money laundering, and embezzlement, charges that could land them alongside drug drug cartel kingpins and one of the country's most notorious lockups. A judge at the maximum security Altiplano prison, from which Joaquin El Chapo Guzman escaped in 2015, denied granting the arrest warrants on Wednesday, but the federal prosecutor immediately announced plans to pursue arrest warrants for a third time. The university professors have been accused of violating a law that prevents members of an advisory board from receiving money from a government science fund. But that law was passed in 2019, and the scientists got the $2.5 million years earlier when it was apparently legal. Those involved have denied the funds were illegal or misused. The National Council on Science and Technology has described the reaction to the arrest warrant applications as a concerted wave of disinformation which was spreading terror in the scientific community. They're talking about funds from illicit origins, and they're calling it organized crime, when it was a nonprofit organization, said Alma Maldonado, investigator with the Public Research Center CINVISTAT. It's completely absurd to take it to this level of accusation. Scientists and academics described the prosecutions as an attempt at silencing them as the administration of President Andrés Manuel López Obrador imposes punishing austerity policies and pays short shrift to science in his response to the pandemic. The message from CONACYT and the prosecutor to the national academic community is strong and clear. If you think differently than us, it's best you find something else to do, wrote political activist Javier Aparicio in the newspaper Excelsior. The criminal accusations have deepened the acrimony between López Obrador administration and the scientific community. AMLO, as the president is known, liquidated public trust for funding academic and scientific research, alleging corruption and claiming the money would pay for pandemic relief. So the attempt to criminally charge academics with organized crime offenses raised questions in Mexico of prosecutorial priorities at a time when the president, who often criticizes journalists and scientists, promotes a policy of hugs, not bullets, and seldom has a crossword for drug cartel bosses. So anyway, this is just very troubling. Troubling indeed, because this could easily start a whole thing where scientists are just prosecuted if they don't line up with what the government wants. Speaking of what the government wants, mobile phones of five French cabinet ministers are confirmed to have been infected by Pegasus malware. The mobile phones of at least five French ministers and a diplomatic advisor to President Macron were infected with the Israeli-made Pegasus spyware. French security services detected the software while inspecting phones, with the intrusions believed to have taken place in 2019 and 2020. Pegasus, made by Israeli firm NSO Group, can switch on a phone's camera or microphone and harvest its data, and was at the center of a storm in July after about 50,000 potential surveillance targets worldwide was leaked to the media. The media consortium behind the revelations, including the Washington Post, The Guardian, and France's Le Monde, reported at the time that one of Macron's phone numbers and those of many French cabinet ministers were on the leaked list. French authorities declined to comment on Friday. So, let's see, what do we got? I don't like the it's good of the public. So, anyway, so that's going on. Oh, we're going to talk about burkas. I've got a story about burkas, too. And it's in France. It's actually the next story. Muslim women are struggling with Germany's hijab ban in workplaces. When 24-year-old Shalan Ahmad arrived to start work at a nursery in Erfurt, Germany, she was immediately turned away. She had applied for the job with her resume and a photo. When she received approval by phone from the nursery's director, she was excited. But as she met Ahmad in person last December, the director took one look at her and turned to the colleague who had organized the meeting. "How can it be that you've allowed this woman to come to speak with me?" she said. Ahmad, who is from Syria, was wearing a headscarf. She did not think this would be a problem, because she assumed the hiring team had seen the photo of her with the hijab before bringing her in. "When I got home, I told my mother, 'I'm taking my headscarf off,' she said. 'I said I can't anymore. I was rejected from the job, and I can't anymore.' In theory, situations like Ahmad's are illegal. Workers are protected by German constitutional law from outright religion-based discrimination and should be given an equal chance at jobs in almost all sectors. But the definition of workplace discrimination with respect to religious expression in Germany is complicated." In July, the European Court of Justice, ECJ, upheld a 2017 ruling allowing employers to adopt neutrality policies banning religious garb in the workplace, but the decision added conditions. Now employers are required to prove that the neutrality policy they have adopted is essential for business. Before the 2017 decision, banning religious symbols for any reason other than safety was not allowed. The ECJ case was brought forward by two German female workers, a daycare center teacher and a cashier, who were asked by their employees to not wear their headscarf at work. The teacher had worked at the center for 2 years before opting to wear the headscarf in early 2016. She wore the scarf to work until mid-October, when she went on maternity leave until May 2018. 2 months before she arrived back at work, the center adopted a new neutrality policy for its employees, barring them from wearing any signs of their political, philosophical, or religious beliefs that are visible to parents, children, and third parties in the workplace. When she returned, she decided to keep the scarf on. After refusing to remove it, she was suspended. Around the same time, another colleague was asked to remove her cross necklace, according to the ruling. The second case was similar. When a Muslim cashier at a German chain pharmacy refused to remove her headscarf, she was sent home. The top EU court ruled the actions against the veiled employees were acceptable because the neutrality policies were implemented in a general and undifferentiated way, and therefore could not be considered direct discrimination. The court added that such policies can only be enforced if they meet a genuine need proven by the employer. She said the way the media handled the story may have had an impact. The European Court of Justice ruling was sold as very negative, Yannick said. Like, headscarf ban in workplace is legal. I think because employers heard this headline without understanding the conditions, it could be said that some said, yeah, we have a neutrality policy now too, without actually reading through or understanding the judgment. Another similar neutrality law banning religious symbols for German federal police officers went into action in early July. The law was introduced in response to a 2017 incident involving a police officer who had tattooed the notes of the Nazi Party anthem across his chest. Although his superiors wanted to fire him, they discovered there was no way to legally dismiss someone based merely on his tattoos. In May 2021, the German government passed the law regulating the appearance of civil servants in response to the case. But instead of sticking only to banning Nazi tattoos, the law also includes a section allowing bans on religious and ideological connotations.
Get the news over with. I want to hear the music.
Each German state can adopt its own neutrality rules. Some have laws banning public lawyers from wearing the headscarf, for example. Berlin, for many years, had its own law banning public school teachers from wearing the headscarf. The institution of yet another neutrality law at the federal level sends the wrong signal to veiled women, because they think, why are you so preoccupied with me? I'm not doing anything. It's enough to have to fight the laws in my own state. Why are you doing this? So, there's a lot of confusion across Germany on this, and So anyway, this is just really troubling. It's an interesting case because you've got only certain religions have outward expressions of their religion, and they just so happen to be the religions that they're trying to discriminate against. So I always find these to be a little off-putting because there's not really a other religions aren't being infringed the same way. So anyway, quite an adventure over there. We've got one more story, and then we'll go ahead and do a song. Indian photographer in video stomps on man shot by Assam police. A video of a photographer stomping and attacking the body of a man shot by police in the northeastern state of Assam has gone viral in India, triggering uproar and protests. In the video, which has not been independently verified by Al Jazeera yet, a man is seen running with a stick towards a group of policemen in riot gear holding firearms in Sipajar village in Assam's Durang district on Thursday. The photographer, identified as Bijoy Banya, is also seen with the policemen, who immediately open fire on the charging man. As soon as he falls to the ground after being shot, nearly a dozen policemen continue to attack him with batons. As the wounded man, identified by the police as Wainul Haki, lies on the ground, a red stain on his vest marking the area where he was shot, Banya approaches the body and begins to stomp on it. The photographer, his face covered and a camera slung around his neck, also punches and kicks the body before he is taken away by the policeman. Seconds later, Banya returns to repeat his attack. This time, Hak's body appears to be lifeless. It's just pretty awful. Don't watch the video if you don't want to. If you didn't want to sleep. India media reports that Banya was arrested late on Thursday and a judicial inquiry into the incident, in which at least one more person died, has been ordered. Durang Superintendent Police Sustana Biswana Sarma, who, according to media reports, is the brother of Assam Chief Minister Hemanta Biswa Sarma, told the India Express newspaper the police did what they had to do in self-defense. Which kind of reminds me of South Park. They're coming right for us! Boom, 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 boom. Shoot, shoot, shoot. But too bad for this photographer. The police are the only one that get to kill people with immunity, not photographers, even if you're hanging out with them. All right, well, the police will kill you if they want to. Nothing you can do about it. Such is life. Make peace with whatever god you have. All right. Oh, you know what? Let's see if I've got it. Oh, I know what to do. I'll use the power of the internet. It's called... I always forget this band's name, so I'm looking for it real quick. There it is. All right, let's just do this one. This is going to be called, oh, here we go. This is the WTO Kills Farmers, and we're talking about the World Trade Organization.
I did my best to make it in the world. I poured my sweat and tears into the fertile generation, generation, generated what was needed for supply to feed the land.
is your non-commercial, non-profit, member-supported underground radio station.
Powered by the SDF Public Access Unix System.
That's right. A little mid-90s punk music for you. That was Anti-Flag and the WTO Kills Farmers. I like a lot of old Anti-Flag music, and so figured I'd play it. I have a whole bunch of their CDs. I don't know why I only have one scanned into the computer, but such is life. That's the way it goes. And the mid-90s was a long time ago now. It was, 24, 25 years ago? It's ways back. Anyway, let's keep on going. We got a few more news stories and just a few more minutes to go. The 1930 UTC, we should have the Dubious Goals Committee. So we'll see what happens. I don't know what's going on over here. In the 90s, remember, I'll just give you this little background because I think this is interesting. So I lived in a small town in rural Texas growing up, and so we didn't get access to the internet at all until about 1996, 1997. I was already in 10th grade. We didn't have cable TV, so it was very, amount of information we got was very hard to get access to anything. The best that we could do is go to the bookstore about 30 minutes away, and we could get a book or a magazine, but you couldn't, that was about it. So, information about anything outside of the United States, or even outside of Texas, was really hard to get. And so that's why the best I could do was stuff on the news. And it was like, I knew that I knew my beliefs were more liberal than most, but it was kind of easy to feel outcast. All we had access, this kind of music was really a big outlet. So anyway, let's go ahead and roll over. Cool. Well, that's good to know. Thanks, Northern Lights. But yeah, it's a lot of fun, and that was kind of the thing, is music was way more accessible, thank you, radio, than a lot of other stuff. All right, let's go ahead and do two more quick stories, and then we'll go ahead and duck out for the internet, for the Dubious Goals Committee. I wanted to mention that there are some cities working hard to expand abortion access. The state of Texas and Alabama and Florida, all the lots of the deep South states are trying really hard to get rid of abortion access and restrict that. Where's our list? There's supposed to be a list. Oh, Colorado's yet not all is lost. Reproductive Health Rights and Justice Activists, advocates, and allies in government have continued to build, working to protect and even advance people's ability to access affordable and stigma-free abortion care. So we've got Colorado's Constitution prohibits Medicaid coverage of abortions. Even exceptions to that general rule include medically unnecessary restrictions. This year, Colorado repealed those restrictions, although the constitutional coverage limitation remains. Connecticut prohibited crisis pregnancy centers from engaging in deceptive advertising. Hawaii expanded access to abortion care by authorizing qualified advanced practice registered nurses to perform first trimester abortions. New Mexico repealed a 1969 law that criminalized abortion, which had been dormant since Roe v. Wade, ensuring that it couldn't be used to threaten New Mexico providers if Roe v. Wade was overturned. Virginia continued its recent efforts to expand abortion access to abortion care, repealing state law. And Washington State already mandates that most insurance plans provide maternity coverage and must also cover abortion. This year, the state extended that requirement to student health plans. So anyway, that's about all we got time for. Thanks so much for listening, and please stick around for the Dubious Goals Committee.
Well, that sound means that our time's come to an end. Thanks for listening. I'll be back tomorrow, and every weekday, Monday through Friday, before the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe at 1900 UTC. Talk to you then.